Welcome to the Living God Church podcast, where faith comes alive. Join us for powerful messages that inspire, challenge, and equip you to grow closer to God and love Jesus more every day.
I'm going to skip the announcements, and I'm just going to jump into the Word. Is that okay? I don't really have any announcements. I'm just going to jump into the Word. I feel like the Lord gave me a word for tonight, so I'm excited to preach that. We have been working through a series here in Richmond, and so this is the first time I've got to preach what I would call more of like an inspired word. Not that what we've been teaching hasn't been inspired, but this is the first time I've felt really prompted to go after a word in a while. I want to talk to you about between. Can you guys see that? It's not too far down on the screen. I forgot that we'd have a bunch of instruments up there. I want to talk to you about between tonight. How many of you feel like you've totally arrived? All right, cool. So this is for everybody. Sweet. Sweet. Good. Nailed it. You guys can go home. I've done my assignment. You haven't. You're dismissed. All joking aside, we like the destination. We like the arrival. We like the finality. We like the end point. But the Christian life is not lived at the end point. The Christian life is lived in the journey. And in fact, I'm going to show you here in just a minute, but what you think is the end point is actually just a new beginning. What you think is the end point is actually just a new beginning. We have been in Richmond for 6 months. I thought Richmond was the end, the arrival, the finality. I thought 6 years, this is November 2nd, right? It's been a long day. This is November 2nd. 6 years ago, at the beginning of November, the Lord said to us that we're going to plant a church in Richmond. Now, it was a while later before I told Lauren, and a while later before I told Pastor Matt, and a while later before I told the apostle. But 6 years ago, he told us we were going to plant a church in Richmond. And I thought for 5+ years that Richmond was the finality. It was the destination. When we get to Richmond, we've arrived. And the moment we arrived in Richmond, I looked up to find out that this was the beginning. This was the beginning. Every end point that you have in mind in your life is just the next beginning. And we live the Christian life between. We live the Christian life between. And what happens is we get talked into being frustrated with the between. We get talked into being aggravated and annoyed and disappointed and overwhelmed and fill in the blank with the between because we think we haven't gotten to where we're supposed to be yet. And I want to talk to you tonight about the purpose of the between, about the intentionality of the between, about what God does in the between, and about how God sets us up in the between. Does that make sense? All right. Here's the thing. If you guys have all heard me preach, and I typically start in a verse and then work verse by verse through a chapter or through several verses. Here's the problem. The story we're going to talk about tonight goes from like Acts 19 through like middle way through Acts 28. So I'm not going to do that to you because I can't afford to keep you here at the rate that we got to pay the student downstairs. I'd have to take up a couple offerings. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to fill in the blanks in between the verses, okay? And I'm going to give you the synopsis of the verses that I'm skipping, okay? In Acts 23, or let me back up. All the way back in Acts 19, Paul is in Ephesus doing the work of the Lord, okay? When he's in Ephesus doing the work of the Lord, he is on his third missionary journey. You guys tracking with me so far? He's on his third missionary journey. That means he's had two. There it is. You're there. He's had two so far. In his first missionary journey, Paul goes out and plants churches and establishes leaders in those churches. In his second missionary journey, Paul's primary mission is to strengthen those churches and to strengthen those leaders. In his third missionary journey, he's doing a little bit of both. He is replanting some other churches, he's reestablishing leadership, and he's re-strengthening the brothers, okay? Paul recognizes by the time he gets to his third missionary journey, we're kind of at the end of the road here. We're kind of culminating his earthly ministry. He recognizes that he's coming to the end of his life, he's coming to the end of his purposes that God has for him. in his third missionary journey, he has stops in places like Ephesus, though. This is where we see the crazy miracles, like where parts of his clothes are being ripped off and sent to demon-possessed people, and they're getting healed miraculously. This is where you get your prayer cloth doctrine from, right? When you come up front and you ask Pastor Matt and Pastor Mike to pray over prayer cloth so that you can send it to your neighbor so that they'll get healed. This is where we get that doctrine from. There's nowhere else in the Bible where that comes from. It is because Paul had an instance in Ephesus where people would rip clothes off of him while he's making tents, and they would send it to people who were sick, and they would get well miraculously. So we're asking, God, would you do it again? Would you do it again? And so in Ephesus, Paul is having crazy breakthrough, and yet in the middle of this crazy breakthrough in Acts 20, in Acts 19, he's in Ephesus having crazy breakthrough, having crazy miracles, having crazy success, and then he feels like it's time to move on, which is wild to me, Paul is not struggling. He's not failing. He's not faltering. He's doing as well as he's ever done. He has a wide and effectual door that's been opened to him, according to some of his letters to his churches. A wide and effectual door to him. And in Acts 20, verse 22, he's talking to the leaders at Ephesus as he's getting ready to depart. And he says, "And now behold, bound by the Spirit, I'm on my way to Jerusalem, not knowing what will happen to me there." Not knowing what will happen to me there. In other words, Paul is saying, I know I've got a good ministry here. I know I'm doing good work on my missionary journey, and yet I can't stay here. It's not good for me to stay in this place where I'm having success, which is wild. And it takes guts. It takes guts for Paul to say, I'm doing well, I'm succeeding, I'm moving forward with the mission, and yet God is calling me to go somewhere else, okay? Paul at this point has no clue why, but the Holy Spirit is urging him and even demanding of him that he make his way to Jerusalem, In Jerusalem, Paul is eventually grabbed by the Jews. You guys know the story because you're good Bible-believing Christians. Paul is eventually grabbed by the Jews. He's handed over to the Romans. There's a back and forth. The Jews want to kill him. Paul finds out that there's a secret plot to kill him. He reports it to the Romans. The Romans extradite him out to some Roman officials. We're now up to Acts 23 now. Do you see why I can't read you every verse? Okay. Are you grateful? Okay, in Acts 23, verse 11, Paul is in custody with the Romans, and the Lord comes to him and says, "But on the night immediately following, while he's in custody, the Lord stood at his side and said, 'Take courage, for as you have solemnly witnessed to my case at Jerusalem, so you must witness at Rome also.'" Hold up. Paul, in Ephesus, doing the work of the Lord, doing the purposes and plans of God in Ephesus, has this unction in his spirit, has this drive from the Holy Spirit that says, you must go to Jerusalem. So he goes, fine, I'll pack up, I'll leave the work of the Lord, and I'll go to Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the new journey. Jerusalem is the new destination. Jerusalem is the new thing that's set ahead of me. So all Paul knows is, when I get to Jerusalem, I will fulfill what God has for me. He lands on the shores of Jerusalem, gets thrown into jail. And now in jail, Paul's going, what in the world? I'm exactly where you told me to be, doing exactly what you told me to do, and now I'm in prison. And the Lord goes, yeah, except now the destination has changed. What you thought was the destination was actually just a stopover. Jerusalem wasn't the destination. Rome is the new destination. Rome is the new destination. As Christians, we live most of our lives in between. Again, we talked about this just a second ago. God is more concerned about the between and the journey. We like the arrival. God likes the between. The destinations in our lives, the horizons that we look at and see and say that is where I get to finally plant my flag. That is where I get to finally put my feet up. Those are mountaintop, momentary experiences that are not meant to be camps that we set up, but they are meant to be breaths that we take so that we can continue on in the journey. Jerusalem was never meant to be the place that Paul settled and stopped. It was meant to be the place that he caught his breath on his way to Rome. And if we see our Jerusalems or our Rome's or our whatever it is, our fill in the blank. If we see our, I just got elected as senior pastor. If Pastor Matt said, all I got to do is get elected as senior pastor and then I've made it. I can kick up my feet and I can go into cruise control for the next 50 years. He would have never or will never fulfill the plan that God has for his life. And you fill in the blank with whatever your mountaintop experience is that you think, I got to get to that moment and then I've arrived. I can kick up my feet and I can go into cruise control and then I'm done until God hits me with a car and I can go home. Because they are meant to be moments where we reach a pinnacle and catch a glimpse of God's grace and his goodness, see a revelation of what he's given to us in our lives so that we can go back down the mountain into the in-between and climb the next mountain that he has ahead of us. The problem is we like it on the mountain because it's sunny on the mountain. It's beautiful, the views from the mountain. It's gorgeous on the mountain. Sometimes it gets cold up there. But it's beautiful up there, and the between is hard. But God makes his mark in the between. God makes his mark in the between. Okay, so Paul has arrived in Jerusalem, and now he's been shipped off through these various back channels through the Romans into through Acts 23 through 27. I'm skipping a lot of text here, okay? I'm trying to condense it down. I've already used 10 minutes. I'm not going to tell you how much longer. I've already used 10 minutes, though. Y'all the one who drove over here. In Acts 23 through 27, Paul is passed back and forth through these magistrates in the Roman system who are trying to send him back to the Jews because they don't want to deal with him. They do the same thing with Paul that they did with Jesus. This isn't our business. This isn't our business. The problem is Paul is a Roman citizen. So they cannot dismiss Paul like they do Jesus. With Jesus, they can say, well, we can do to Jesus whatever we want because he's not a Roman citizen. Paul has a right. As a Roman citizen, they can't just treat him however they want. They can't just beat him up, crucify him, throw him over a cliff. As a Roman citizen, he has a right. And Paul eventually enacts what is called this appeal to Caesar. It is the right of a Roman citizen at this time where he can essentially appeal to the highest ruling authority. And Paul does this as a part of God's plan to get him to Rome. Paul is going to get to Rome regardless of who wants to stand in the way. God's going to get Paul to Rome. So in this Acts 23 through 27, they're trying to ship Paul back to the Jews, and God finally stirs Paul to the point that he appeals to Caesar, and this means that the Romans cannot send him back to the Jews. Are you still with me? All right, I've given you most of the backstory. Finally, the Romans say, fine, you've appealed to Caesar, you have to go to Caesar. You're gonna appeal before Caesar in Rome. Paul is now destined to go and stand before Caesar in Rome. All the way back in Acts 19, he's saying, I'm doing a good work for God in Ephesus, but he's calling me to go to Jerusalem. Okay, fine, I'll go to Jerusalem. He gets to Jerusalem. He said, God, I've arrived in the place you want me to be. And God says, yeah, but Jerusalem isn't the place for you. Rome is the place for you. Okay, fine, God, I'll go to Rome, but now I'm not in Rome, and I can't get to Rome, and I'm stuck in prison, and I'm in all these chains, and I'm bound, and I'm shut up, and what can I do? And I'll appeal to Caesar. Okay, now, God, I'm appealing to Caesar, and now I'm on my journey. Acts 27 is where we pick up Paul's journey from the magistrates, from the ruling authorities into Rome. In verse 14 and 15, they put Paul and his companions, some other prisoners, on a boat. And they put him on a boat in the middle of a storm because Paul always seems to be sailing in a storm. And but before very long, there rushed down from the land a violent wind called which is a northeaster. And when the ship was caught in it, it could not face the wind, and we gave way to it. This is Luke writing, so poor Luke gets stuck with him. And we gave way to it and let ourselves be driven along. How'd you like to be Luke? You're not even an apostle of the Lord. You just get stuck on the boat with Paul and shipwrecked. And we gave way to it. Why is this important? Paul is trying to go north. He's sailing from south to north, and a northeaster comes. That's not good. A storm comes. So Paul says, I'll go to Jerusalem because that's what you want me to do. And he gets thrown in prison. He goes, fine, I'll go to Rome because that's what you want me to do. And he gets thrown in prison. He goes, fine, I'll appeal to Caesar because that's the only way I can get to Rome. And he appeals to Caesar, and they go, okay, we'll put you on a boat and we'll get you to Caesar. And he goes, okay, great, now I'm definitely going to get to Caesar. And then out of nowhere comes a wind from the north that prevents him entirely from sailing north, which is the only direction he can go to get to Caesar. At this point, Paul has to be thinking, God himself doesn't want me to do what God himself has called me to do. In verse 20 through 26, Paul is on the boat, and Luke writes, since neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small storm was assailing us. From then on, all hope of our being saved was gradually abandoned. This is Paul, the apostle, with his companion Luke, ordained by God to arrive at a particular place. He doesn't just think he should go. God said, you must go. It is a necessity that you arrive at this place. And when they had gone a long time without food, Paul stood up in their midst and said, men, you ought to have followed my advice. Paul told them we shouldn't sail in this storm. You ought to have followed my advice and not to have set sail from Crete and incurred this damage and loss. And yet, now I urge you to keep up your courage, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of this ship. For this very night, an angel of God to whom I belong and whom I should serve stood before me, saying, do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar, and behold, God has granted you those who are sailing with you. You must stand before Caesar, and behold, God has granted you all those who are sailing with you. I want you to see, when Paul feels like all forces of nature, God himself even is standing against him, his faith doesn't come from circumstance. His faith doesn't come from something he can work up. His faith doesn't come from some external environment. His faith doesn't come, it surely doesn't come from friends. It doesn't come from the environment. His faith comes from the original word that God gave. When the angel comes to stand beside Paul, he does not remind Paul of who Paul is. He does not remind Paul of what Paul has done. He does not remind Paul of the work that Paul did in Ephesus, or how Paul was good in Jerusalem, or how Paul was cool and in the chains, or how Paul said the right words when he was standing before Felix. The angel's reminder is, God told you, you must. You must. The assurance of our arrival is not based on what we have done. It is based on what God has said. It's based on what God has said. And if my assurance is based on anything other than what he has said, then I'll fail. I'll fall flat. God's sovereignty doesn't take a break in the in-between. His sovereignty doesn't fold up shop in the in-between. And I think sometimes, are you okay? Sometimes we get stuck in between seasons where we think everybody and everyone is up to everything, and we give credit to everyone and everything and all they're doing and forget that he is still up to something. He is still up to something. He is still the one seated on the throne. He is still the one working all things according to his good pleasure. He is still the one who has promised to accomplish all of his purposes. He is still the one who has promised that his will stand. And when my life feels like it has no stability, his sovereignty has to be the bedrock foundation that I run to. It has to be. And if there is anything that challenges his sovereignty, then I've messed up. It's his sovereignty that has to stand. Remember what the apostle used to say? Jesus isn't wringing his hands. How many times did he stand at an altar and say, Jesus isn't wringing his hands? He didn't get knocked off his throne by that information. What was he saying? He was saying he's still God. Verse after verse after verse after verse from Genesis to Revelation declares that he will do whatever he wants to do regardless of whatever anybody else decides. He will accomplish his purpose. And the angel said, Paul, you must go to Rome. And there's no storm, there's no trial, there's no adversary, there's no enemy. There's no anything that will stop you from arriving where you're supposed to arrive. But look what he goes on to say. Therefore, keep up courage, men, for I believe, this is verse 25, for I believe that God will turn out, I believe, God, that it will turn out exactly as I have been told, but we must run aground on a certain island. Same word for must. In the same way that Paul must go to Caesar and must go to Rome, he must run aground. He must run aground. God does not just sovereignly ordain the end. He sovereignly ordains the in-between. He sovereignly ordains the in-between. If we chuck up the in-between as lost time, we have discounted God's work in our life. God sovereignly ordained that Paul must shipwreck on that island. Did Paul want to sail in the storm? No. But was God using the shipwreck that was coming? Absolutely. God had sovereignly declared that the shipwreck would be used for his glory. He had sovereignly declared that that shipwreck that was on its way was going to be used. In the same way that he must stand before Rome, he must shipwreck. Acts 28, they shipwreck, by the way. In Acts 28, are you okay? When they had been brought safely through the storm, by the way. When they had been brought safely through, then we found out that the island was called Malta, and the natives showed us extraordinary kindness. For because of the rain that had set in, because of the cold, they kindled a fire and received us all. This is a place where Paul is shipwrecked. This is the first description that we have of the place where Paul is shipwrecked. I don't know about you. I'm not writing about the place that I'm shipwrecked, talking about it with extraordinary kindness. But this is the way that the doctor talks about how they were received at the place where they were shipwrecked, with extraordinary kindness. And the name of this island is Malta. Malta. You know what Malta means? It means honey. It means sweetness. The between is not meant to be a place of frustration or aggravation. It is a place of sweetness and kindness. It's a place of sweetness and kindness. We treat the between like it's a stubbed toe. We treat the between, I treat the between like it's a stubbed toe. Like it's a sickness that I got to put up with until I get to the place where I can finally be free of this thing that I've been lugging around. Till I can get to the place where I finally get to do where I want to do. Or I finally get to be who I want to be. Or I finally get to go where I want to go. That's not how God sees the between. He sees it as sweet. He sees it as kind. He sees it as beautiful. He sees it as wonderful. And if we don't embrace the beauty and the wonder and the splendor of the between, we will miss what God has prepared for us. Because he has ordained places between our arrivals. Ordained places between our arrivals. In verses 7 through 10 of Acts 28, he says, now in the neighborhood of that place were lands belonging to the leading men of the island named Publius, who welcomed us and entertained us courteously 3 days. And it happened that the father of Publius was laying in bed afflicted with recurrent fever and dysentery. You know what that is? It's bad news bears if you don't have medicine. And Paul went in to see him. And after he had prayed, he laid his hands on him and he healed him. And after this happened, the rest of the people on the island who had diseases were coming to him, Paul, and getting cured. And they also honored us with many marks of respect. And when they were setting sail, they supplied us with all we needed. The work of the between is not busy work. It is kingdom work. It is kingdom work. It is really easy to chalk up the work of our between seasons as just getting by. As just getting by. It's really easy to go, man, God has called me for great things one day. And right now, I'm just checking the boxes. And I'm just mowing the lawn. Or I'm just, you know, I'm just helping out. I'm just showing up at kids' class. I'm just singing the songs with the kids. Or I'm just passing out snacks. Or I'm just helping out wrapping up cords with the worship team or shaking hands at the door, whatever the it is in the in-between. I'm just doing the whatever in-between. I'm just filling in. But one day, then I'll really be doing something that matters. One day I'll really be doing something that counts. Man, all I did this morning is shook a hand and hugged a neck. That's all I did. And it wasn't worth much, but one of these days, maybe I'll be standing somewhere where somebody can see me, doing something that somebody cares about, answering something that somebody actually puts some proper weight on. But the work of between carries great kingdom weight. The work of the between is kingdom work. God doesn't give out busy work. God doesn't do busy work. The work that God gives out is all kingdom work. Matter of fact, the work that God gives out when nobody's looking is a test to see if you can handle more work. And if you can't handle the work when nobody's looking, He won't give you work when people are looking. He won't give you work when people are looking. He's asking, can you handle the assignment with no applause? He's asking, can you do it with nobody patting you on the back and with no attaboys? Can you do the stuff when just Jesus says thank you? Is it enough for His presence to be the celebration? Do you need a paycheck? Or can you just crawl back into the closet and say, thank you, Lord, that somebody showed up? Are 8 people enough? Will you keep coming for 8? Or do you need 80 or 800? Is it enough? He's asking. He's really asking. Because He tests everything with weight. Because He refuses to see one of His kids break under too much weight. He tests everything with weight. And He's careful about how much He gives out at a time. He's not dumb. He won't hand a Ferrari key over to somebody who can't drive a Corolla. He's a better dad than you think. He's a better dad than you think. You wouldn't do it. You wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. He's a good dad. So He's asking, can you handle an assignment when nobody's looking? What feels like busy work, what feels like checking a box, what feels like just showing up, will you do it when nobody's looking? Story after story of people who are what we would call, quote unquote, successful in the ministry will tell you story after story of we just kept showing up. We just kept showing up. Sometimes there was nobody there and we just kept showing up. And it was just us and Jesus. And then one day it was like people just came out of nowhere. The stuff just came out of nowhere. We have no idea how it happened. Why? Because we got to a point where He was enough. He was enough. So what we do in the in-between is not busy work, it is kingdom work. He's not handing out random busy tasks to keep you doing something in the between so you'll stay engaged. What you're doing now is a real assignment. Extra biblical info. You okay with extra biblical info? Church history tells us that Publius, after being converted by Paul, not only gives his life to Jesus, but he becomes the bishop of Malta. You know what a bishop is? It's the overseer of the island. Publius doesn't just give his life to Jesus. He doesn't just become converted and live a life for Jesus. He becomes a converter. Publius begins doing the work of the kingdom. Publius not only says, hey, I like this Jesus guy and I'm going to live my life for him. Publius then says, okay, now that I've experienced Jesus, because Paul got shipwrecked on an island that he wasn't supposed to get shipwrecked on, according to him. He was supposed to end up in Rome, but God ordained him to get shipwrecked on this island. Now I've been saved and my dad's been healed. Now I'm going to make sure everyone I encounter gets saved. And according to church history, he's the first bishop of Malta. He establishes the Church of Jesus Christ on the island of Malta, which is still going strong today. How strong? Thank you for asking. According to the data in 2018, there were somewhere around 485,000 people on the island of Malta. 95% of those people claim Christianity as their religion. 95%. 95%. Now, are 95% on fire for Jesus? I don't know. I don't care. That's wild. In America, it's like 60. It's like 60 on a good day. On a good day. On a bad day, who knows? 95% of the people on an island are giving their life to Jesus on a daily basis because Paul was not supposed to be there, and God said, you must get shipwrecked on this little bitty baby island because there's a man who's going to give his life to me and going to establish a church there and going to see people be converted so that generation after generation after generation will give their life to me. Even though you think it's a between season and it's not worth stopping there and you've got better places that you need to be. The between is not busy work. It is kingdom work where God does a thing through a seed that we can never fathom. And because Publius gets converted, generations on an island of Malta are saved and sanctified and set free from pagan religions. And today, they claim Jesus as Lord. Because Paul ended up in a place where he wasn't supposed to be, according to Paul. I'm almost done. Acts 28, verse 11. And at the end of 3 months, we set sail on an Alexandria ship, which was wintered on the island, had the twin brothers for its figurehead. After we put in at Syracuse, we stayed there for three days. And from there, we sailed around Rhegium. A day later, a south wind sprang up. And on the second day, we came to Puteoli. And there we found some brethren and invited them to stay with us for 7 days. And thus we came to Rome. Paul made it. I know we think we're never going to make it. Hear me. We've been here 6 months. Hear me. I know you think you're never going to make it. You'll get there when you're supposed to get there. It may feel like 3 days, 3 months, and then 3 days, and then 2 more days, and then 7 more days. You'll get there when you're supposed to get there. When your in-between is done, God will make sure you get there. Whenever you're supposed to get there. And when you're supposed to get there, it will feel weird and it will feel awkward, and you'll look around and go, how in the world did we get here? In the Greek here, verse 13, it says, from there we sailed around and arrived at that place. And a day later, a south wind sprang up. That's not a good translation in the English, because our English can't do what the Greek is doing there. A south wind sprang up. This isn't a new wind. It wasn't that the north wind had stopped and gone away and then a new south wind began to spring up. The Greek really is telling us this, that the wind that was blowing from the north suddenly shifted directions and began blowing from the south. That's what the Greek is really telling us. The Greek is not saying that there was a north wind that had shipwrecked Paul and then it stopped and went away for a while, and then a new wind began to blow. That's not what it's saying. It's saying there was a wind that was blowing in opposition to them, and then that stopped blowing. A wind was blowing, and then all of a sudden, what seemed like on a dime, that wind that was in opposition to them, that would not break, that would not relent, that would not go away, it suddenly totally shifted directions and blew exactly in the direction that they needed it to go. And they arrived exactly where they needed to arrive, exactly when they needed to arrive, and faster than they ever thought they could have. That's what the Greek is saying. That Paul thought he would never arrive at Rome because this force was working against him supernaturally. And when it was time, God said, get in the boat and you'll arrive faster than you ever thought possible. That's what the Greek is saying. When it's time, you'll show up exactly where you're supposed to show up, faster than you ever thought possible. Faster than you ever thought possible. We worry that God has forgotten about us in our between seasons. God hasn't forgotten about you. He is preparing you. He's making you sturdy and ready and steadfast so that when you arrive, you don't crumble to pieces. God has not forgotten you. He's refining you. He's dusting you off so that when you show up, you don't get your tail kicked in. God is making sure that when you arrive on the shores of Rome, you've got everything you need to tell Caesar's house everything they need to know so that the gospel will flourish in Rome. He refuses to allow you to arrive in Rome unprepared. He's sending you not just out, but out with testimony and out with blessing and out with grace and out with mercy. He won't send you out in weakness. He hasn't forgotten you in between. He hasn't forgotten you in between. He's making sure that when you get there, you've got everything you need. Everything you need. And I know it feels like, are you sure? Are you sure? Yeah. Yeah. Because He's better. He's better. He's better than we are. He's better than we are. I would have sent me before He sent me, but I would have crumbled. I'd have given up by now if I sent me when I wanted to send me. I'd have left by now. I'd have walked away by now. I'd have given in by now. But He's too good. He's too good. He refuses to move until He knows that we're ready to handle what He has for us. And the between, it's not wasted. It's preparation. It's preparation. Stand with me. I'm done. It's not wasted time. It's not wasted time. I'm going to move this. He didn't waste time. It's not what He does. He's too resourceful to waste time. He's too good to waste time. He's too kind to waste time. I look back at every moment that I thought was wasted time, and I realized it was strategic preparation. I look now at every moment that I think is wasted time, and I realize somehow it is strategic preparation. I don't get it yet, but one day I will. One day I will. There are things that I beg God for. Things that I beg God to show up and do that He hasn't shown up and done yet. And yet I'm reminded, if He hasn't yet, it's because we're not ready yet. We're not ready yet. He's still working on something. He's still working on something.
Thanks for joining us at Living God Church. We pray this word encouraged and challenged you. Be sure to stay connected and keep pursuing a deeper relationship with Jesus. Until next time, be blessed.